From the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll hear excerpts from the corn panel that took place earlier in this week at the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois. Our panelists for the day included Kevin Van Trump of the Van Trump Report, Aaron Curtis from Midco, and Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas.
Thanks so much, guys, for being here. So let's lay out what's been happening in the corn market. We talked about soybeans, and Aaron, I want you to give me kind of the Reader's Digest view of basis levels in the area and then across the Midwest, if you could, please.
Well, really, the last couple of years, we've kind of seen
this right up here next.
We've kind of seen this story, kind of a two-tail story here between the East and the West, and a lot of it's kind of gone that way again here. This year, we continue to see the Eastern Corn Belt continue to be pretty well supported basis-wise. We got Decatur sitting here of a round of a 15 over, something like that here, which is a pretty good historical value. The Eastern rail markets, the CSX and the NS, continue to kind of perk up a little bit. Southern Indiana ethanol plants paying some pretty good levels at this point right now. And then you get to the other side of the Mississippi, where you went into harvest with some pretty good supplies already on hand. Another big crop out there, both corn and soybeans. So we're seeing basis levels continue to be fairly weak, especially once you get up into northern Iowa, southern Minnesota. Is this better? Okay. So once again, we're kind of dealing with this divide between the Mississippi River being between the east and the west. I think that's going to continue to be the story here as we go through this next marketing year. And once again, the producer is going to have a big impact in that. We put harvest away for the most part. Yields were good around the Corn Belt. I mean, most of you saw that. Producer, we tended to, at the elevator level, buy a little more corn across the scale than what the anticipation was. We went into harvest with not much purchases on the books. We bought a little more than we anticipated, but the farmer is still a fairly big long in the corn market. So once again, going to be a big dictator of what basis here, at least on the east side of the Mississippi. If the producer doesn't sell much corn, which we anticipate, we're going to have to see some instances where basis continues to do the work. We've already seen that in the East March corn spread, trading into 7.5 here with full carry up around 17 to 18 cents. So we look at a corn crop of a record, 175 yield, over 15 billion bushels, and we have a hard time in some areas buying much corn. So I think that's going to continue to be the situation here as we move through this winter months, especially if this market continues to be pretty boring, trade sideways, which what we've seen a lot of. But once again, we're going to continue to watch this east versus west, watching these corn move from the west to the east. The CP put in last week some rates to move corn from those Dakotas, northern Iowa into Decatur and into eastern Indiana. So we're going to continue to see instances like that where we move corn from cheap basis levels to stronger basis levels, and that's going to continue to dictate basis here as we move through these winter months, much like we've seen the last couple years.
How much does that deteriorate your local basis? So if they put into place the ability to rail from South Dakota or North Dakota into Decatur, how much of an impact does it have on your bid for the day? So does it hold it back a nickel? A dime?
Well,
I know it's variable, but really, what's the impact?
Yeah, hard to quantify, but I think we got to keep in mind just because the rates are there doesn't necessarily mean the corn's going to move, right? So
hold the mic. Put it on your chin and leave it there. There you go. Thank you.
I have to have a lesson here, microphone management.
Yeah.
But just because the rates are there doesn't necessarily mean the corn's going to move. So keep that in mind. Areas like Cedar Rapids that grind quite a bit of corn, areas like Decatur can't function on just rail corn alone. So keep that in mind also. So those truck markets have to continue to feed those markets. It's not just rail alone, but we're not seeing a lot of corn moving from that western corn into Decatur yet, but just the idea that it's there is something you just got to kind of keep an eye on so the basis doesn't get too far ahead of itself here moving forward.
Mike Zuzulo, you have a whole paper load worth of stuff about the commodity markets. What's the number one issue for you as it relates to corn?
Very simple. If we want Trumpflation, as the Financial Times calls it, which is a mindset where deficit spending is going to push our consumption up and our demand up, if we're going to get inflation out of that in the commodity markets, wheat and gold are our best indicators. If we see a sharp dollar rally led by a sharp bond yield or interest rate hike, prepare for a worst case scenario. And I say that, Todd, because not to scare people, but a lot of people have said this is just like when Ronald Reagan got into office in 1980. We had 20% CPI inflation when Ronald Reagan got into office. So this is nothing economically, in my opinion, and in terms of Federal Reserve monetary policy, nothing like when Ronald Reagan got into office. So if we see the dollar continue to rally, and all these emerging markets like China, like Brazil, have a lot of dollar debt, their debt increases. As the dollar goes up, they get more in debt. That lends to the credibility of the bears out there that you've got a dollar-led trade war, currency war, whatever you want to call it, but essentially recessionary pressure that presses the market lower. So the dollar trend is paramount. And I'll finish with this. One of the guys that I really have liked a long time is the guy, Jim Paulson from Wells Capital Management. He said something like, in the five or six times since the 1970s, when the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, as long as it doesn't go sharply higher, that attracts inflation. So he's a dollar bear. He thinks the dollar is going to go lower like I do because the Fed is actually coming back in and saying, let's go ahead and get rid of deflation, get rid of quantitative easing. So I'm not negative the commodity sphere, but I think that's what we got to watch out for is if I'm wrong and Paulson's wrong and the dollar goes sharply higher because of sharply higher interest rates, that's really going to hurt our commodity inflationary mindset.
Kevin Van Trump, on the large 40,000 look down at this marketplace, and you'll probably want to talk about the interest rates and dollar as well. Do you view it the same way that Mike does?
No, I'm not sure I view it the exact same way. When you're trying to start get it, the controversy rolling.
Working for a trade war, yes.
No, I'm just saying, I sold some beans today. We sold 5% on the rally up here at about 10:15. I'm of the belief that that you're just seeing a sloshing around of money right now. Trump took office. You had a lot of the hedge funds, a lot of the guys I talked to on the East Coast, the West Coast. A lot of those guys were nervous, moved some positions back around. I would call it a sloshing of money. If I were to give you, if I'm the Goldman CEO and I give you $10 million and say, invest it in the ag space, the only market right now with the story tends to be soybeans. You're seeing a push and some money move over. You've seen copper rally 20% like Goldke and the guys talked about. You've seen crude oil move. So when you have a balanced hedge fund, which we sell to the California pension people and other pension funds in a balanced fund portfolio, you see some spreading of wealth, so to speak. That spreading of wealth is just landed a little bit into the soybean market. That's it, in my opinion. I think there's a glut. As Mike talks about, we're obviously keeping a close eye on the dollar. I think the dollar's probably a little bit of a blip as well as you get this Trump type of move into the White House. I think the whole world is going to fight deflation, not inflation. Technology, and what you guys heard here today and what I continue to see, we're on a wave of technology. Technology is here, and technology by nature is deflationary. Its job is to produce things at a cheaper rate. We've seen it in our neighbors in the energy space. I own some ethanol plants. I do some things in fracking. I own some CNG natural gas fueling facilities. It's brutal. The onslaught of technology is changing the game, and it's deflationary, and every world economy is facing it. So I don't think the Fed raises rates at a rapid fashion. I don't think the Fed goes on a tear. I think they're going to get some arrows back in their quiver and continue to fight deflation, and that'll be the big one. And so I'm hoping, I'm bullish wheat right now. I've got some long wheat positions. I'm bullish corn to a small extent, even though we're swimming in corn. But I'm hoping we catch a tailwind and get some more of this money to re-rotate back into the commodity sector. So that's my stance right now.
Small extent, how many pennies is that on corn?
Small as in bullish on corn?
Yes.
Well, how I'm hoping this possibly could play out. I think I'm bullish wheat just from a stance of some unforeseen black swan event, some type of, we saw headlines today, Putin moves more missiles onto the European front. I suspect Trump, Putin decides to move into Europe. I know Michael talked about it. If Putin moves troops over into Europe, we see a war break out. That's where all the wars started. We're 28 years without a war. Here we sit. Last time Putin moved troops into Crimea, wheat bounced to $8. So I'm saying I think there's a better chance. I like the risk to reward of being long wheat versus short wheat. Also going into the winter. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, ADM called me up, wanted to know why wheat was rallying into this polar vortex. Well, you had a bunch of hedge fund guys that were sitting on 30% gains in the equity market and trying to hedge against a bad winter here in the U.S. They want to protect equity gains by getting long the wheat market, because they figured if we had a really bad winter, it would hurt first quarter earnings of their stock portfolio. So what market could they manipulate and move the most? I would suspect wheat. So a bad winter, you get long the wheat market, and that's how they played it. So that's all I'm saying. I think wheat could pull us higher. I think wheat could give us a chance to move corn up. Everybody's on the same side of the boat, it seems to me, talking the same fundamental and technical game. So I think you got to take a little bit different view.
So your point really is not about the fundamentals underneath the marketplace, but about a large amount of money that's going to move around looking for a home?
Yeah, a lot of the kids that they're hiring right now, they're not hiring traders on Wall Street. They're hiring guys that have physics majors and that can create algorithms and quants and black box artificial intelligent machines, and that's who's swinging the biggest dollar. I agree with Eleanor. There's a pinch on soybeans down, or meal, down in the southeast of Missouri, but I promise you about 80% of the people that they've got hired that are trading that money into those markets, that really has no major bearing on that daily movement. So,
all well and good for the futures markets, but I have to deal with the cash price. That really is where I have to deal with this in the end. I've got corn in the bin, or whether it's in the bin on the home farm or in storage. And I'm really thinking I'm just going to hold it. Is that something I should do, Mike?
Corn only. And you don't care how long you have to keep it, or do you have to move it by Christmas for the children? G.I. Joe, the Kung Fu group.
Frankly, I don't want to pay storage after January, and in the bin, I want it out before the next. Well, I don't know when you want it out. I want it out. I don't care.
I can
hold it in the bin for as long as needed.
I think you're getting your basis rally right now. I think as you go higher in futures, the elevators will start to pull basis back out, so that your net gain will not be as good as what it could be right now. So if I needed to move by December 31st, I'd recommend a client working with me to lock the basis in right now, give it 25 days, lock the futures in. If you get above the 360 area in December corn, don't let it slide back. I think that's the kind of market we're in right now, in part because of the high-speed trading that we are talking about today, which, by the way, it's been an absolutely wonderful conference when it comes to some of these things we're talking about with big data.
Well, thank you. 370 was really my point on the futures market.
I understand, and you could get there, but I'm saying don't let the momentum go against you. Once you get above 360, 362 area, don't let it go backwards on you.
Aaron, your thoughts?
I guess I tend to agree with Mike. I think 360 obviously has been kind of that lid we've had in D's corn here the last few times we've been up there. We keep knocking on that door and can't get through it, so I think that's something you got to watch pretty carefully. I mean, to be honest, I'm a little friendly corn. I think we could see a little upside. It's going to be measured. It's not going to be anything immediate. I think it's going to be a slow grind, but I think there's going to be some opportunities to sell some better prices here at some point, but you got to manage your own logistics, right? If you got corn to move here by the end of the year, you got to do that. And I think if you take it to the elevator, I think you sell it.
Well, dang it, Aaron, I didn't want Gulkey to be right, and I should have just sold it out of the field, because frankly, 360 doesn't gain me anything, right? I need 370 to make a dime or something like that. I want something from holding on. Who's got a question out here they want answered on the corn market? Surely you guys do. I need help. It's at the end of the day here. No? Oh. Yeah, Tim? His question is, he needs more than $4 for corn. What will get him there? That's your question, really, isn't it? Oh. So last year, everybody said El Nino's in place. We had it all set up, right? Everybody listened to the weather guys. El Nino is in place. We're going to have a hot summer, they said, and it probably will be dry. That was the part we didn't pay enough attention to. It was probably will be dry at some point. It is now.
I guess the biggest thing, Tim, that's different from this year right now than last year at this time, and maybe this gets the answer to your question, is we are working our way up in soybean ending stocks here domestically, but we're still relatively tight globally. And as we go up in price on a South American weather scare, we'll be adding more pressure to increase bean acres. In other words, by March 1, if you get a Nov bean, and Greg talked about this a bit during the bean panel, if you get a bean corn ratio closer to 2.75, or you get up to 2.8, 2.85 by March 1, then you could see bigger bean acres, and that opens the door up to more frequent or better rallies than maybe the market's expecting right now in the corn. Think about the ending stocks in corn, the exact opposite of what we're dealing with beans. Big ending stocks domestically, but still at the stocks to use ratio level, almost identical to where we were 2 years ago. So we don't have a burdensome supply globally in corn that we do domestically. So that's where your acreage play as we go up in beans here, and this is probably the biggest thing I can bring to everybody today as far as my analysis goes. Make yourselves understand this year more than ever, because of the low cost of production and the desire to add more bean acres, the higher the prices go early. Think of your revenue per acre on your whole farm. In other words, last year at this time, or shortly afterwards, we were rallying in beans. Many of us were talking about sell the beans, hedge the beans, sell the beans, but it just wasn't going to work. And so what I started talking to producers about was, if you sell the beans now and it goes higher, say at 1050, 1060, that's when we started to really get into the sales. If it goes higher, you'll make it on the corn side. So on a revenue per acre mindset, that should work even more this year. If we go higher earlier and we get to 1060 November beans, and I'm 100% sold at 1060, then if I'm wrong by selling there, I should be making some of that lost revenue up by making better corn sales later. That's how I want you got to elevate that marketing plan this year, and you've got to think both corn, beans, and if you plant wheat also. But that's how I'm looking at it.
Kevin, I have a question going back to last year. We know that the United States is the largest exporter of corn on the planet, largest producer of corn on the planet. How the devil is it that Brazil, which we never have thought about being a corn producer, made a play in the marketplace in the summertime to push corn prices into the 440 area? How did that happen? It doesn't seem like something that makes any sense to me. Did they really ramp up acres enough to do that? I mean, I look back at it and I think, gosh, they're there with the soybeans. Yeah, we know how many acres they have in soybeans, and they're a big player in the soybeans, but they're not in the corn market. So why did it have such an impact?
Well, I think last year you had the issues with second crop corn in South America, in Brazil in particular. And I think that's going to go hand in hand with the question you're asking. How high can we go? That's the magic question. My next sales targets for new crop are out at 410, 415 area. I'm being patient here. I think there's room to work. I look at the market like this. I say there's three main, I put it in my terms because I come from a small rural town and just happened to get lucky in Chicago. Here's the deal. I believe the market now in today's world fires on three main cylinders, with the macro hedge fund guys being the most powerful, with the most torque and the most horsepower. Then you got demand, and then you have weather hiccups. those being your three main ingredients or drivers of torque and horsepower. We've got strong demand, but we don't have any weather story right now, and we don't really have any macro fun type of interest into the corn market. They're almost flat in their corn positions. So to me, that means you're firing on one cylinder. If all of a sudden, like Mike says, you get some break in the dollar and you get a little, if you get crude oil back, say, steadily above 50 bucks, you get some more interest in the precious, or I should say industrial metals. Next thing, here we are. We got now some horsepower from the funds coming back in. You'd spark a weather rally with it. I don't see why you couldn't. You could potentially be at $5.50, $6 corn. I know these guys think maybe I've lost my mind. But I'm going to tell you right now, most of the bearish cards are already on the table and flipped over. So what? We're 2.5 billion bushels. I think a lot of guys are saying 2.6 to 2.7. I don't think that probably goes higher right from this point forward. Everybody's already looking for a big crop out of Brazil. I don't think it creeps much higher. They're going to need a lot of that domestic corn. Everybody's talking, you know, we may cut a few acres, which I'm hoping we do. That's going to be an interesting play. But I'm just saying, I think you could start to see maybe some bullish cards come out of the deck. And hopefully that starts to fire up a couple of these cylinders that aren't firing right now. And that brings some interest back, and then we take back off to the upside. I mean, that hope's never been a good strategy for me, but I'm just letting you know that's what I'm hopeful for, to price some of my additional bushels, both here in the U.S. and in Brazil. And I think he's alluding to, we have some farms in Brazil that have been huge, I would say nightmares as far as any type of profits are concerned. We've never made a dime, and I'm not sure we will. But as you guys all have alluded to up here, I don't see production cutting back over there as long as this dollar stays firm like it has stayed, and the Brazilian real is in the position it is. I feel like they're going to continue to roll out some more acres and probably be a pretty fierce headwind as far as our exports are concerned for some time. So I think there's a lot of moving parts on that.
What's your view on how acreage plays out this spring in Illinois and across the United States?
Well, I think we're anticipating corn acres to be lower. I think you've got a lot of private estimates out there that say that we're going to, you know, be quite a bit lower. I guess we're not quite in that camp, but I think we could see something in that 90 million acre, which is quite a reduction from where we're at. But 2.5 million or billion carry out, you start doing the math, even at 170 yield for next year, I mean, it changes the math a little bit, but not a great deal. We're still looking at a 2 billion bushel carry out for next year. We got record demand here. I know we talk a lot about that, so that's not going to be any sort of surprise to the market right now. I mean, this is old news, right, from the demand side. We got to continue to have these big export sales, these big weekly ethanol numbers that we're going to see again tomorrow morning. So the market's at this point looking for something new, and that's why I think these lower corn acres, at least the anticipation of that, is going to keep some support underneath the market, because I think there's enough of a potential for reduction that we're going to continue to find some support in this 325 to 350 area. And you know, one thing I'd mentioned about South America, I know it's obviously been a big help for the export side, at least in the U.S., because you see that in the balance sheet here this year with the highest export number we've seen in quite a few years, and Brazil had a lot to do with that. The market seemed to be fairly surprised last year when the weather changes happened in Brazil, with too dry there and too wet in Argentina. You know, we're not going to be surprised this year. So I think, if we continue to see a little bit of concern with some dry weather in southern Brazil and Argentina here, especially if La Nina starts to take a little more force here, I think the market's going to be a little more prepared and a little more probably reactive than it has, than we've seen the last couple years.
Mike, I want you to take up the fundamental side of the marketplace, but not until I get a question from somebody out here. Anybody got one?
I'm just curious. I'd like to go back to the dollar and inflation. If the Fed runs it in interest up, say, 1%, or isn't that just going to flood money in from the rest of the world? You've got Japan, I think, with a negative interest rate, and Europe somewhere next to zero. If we get up to 2% interest, isn't that going to bring a lot of money in? And what's that do to the strength of the dollar, and what's that do to our competitiveness worldwide then?
So if interest rates go up and you have negative interest rates in other part of the world, won't cash flow into the U.S.? And
what happens? I think that's, you know, I think that's a great question. I'm on board with you. I think what we've had is we've seen, I like to visualize it, you've seen all the world's central bankers moving their boats to the left in a quantitative easing type of environment. The U.S. is turning their boat back around and heading the other direction. It's created some major sloshing. I think that sloshing in the waves has added some interest back into the U.S. dollar. People seek somewhat of a safe haven there, and it provides some strength. I don't foresee, and I'm sticking with what I've seen. I do some work with the Fed, and we're over with the Kansas City Fed and some others. I don't think they're going to take an aggressive approach. I think they're trying to get some arrows back in their quiver, as I kind of said earlier, to maybe help us out if we were to fall back or to break back again. I think they're going to continue to fight a deflationary battle, and I think you will see some money flow back into the U.S., especially with the repatriation of what I think Trump's talking about and some of the other politicians, and that we're going to open up this window to repatriate some money, which I think would be a good windfall. And that's where you're seeing this rotation of money into realigning in certain asset classes and certain investments to try and reposition themselves if that happens. So I'm hoping that creates some tailwind for commodities.
Other questions?
I think I heard you say that you would be selling corn at 360, 362.
If I had to sell by December 31st, I continue to recommend clients, I'm targeting 385 March corn for the sales that I want to make of 16 crop in the bin.
Okay, what would you do with options, if anything, if you did that before the December 31st? In other words, you made your 360, 362, what would you do if anything?
Oh, as far as buying back? I would be hesitant to buy options at that point. I would probably rather do futures with a relatively tight stop. One of the things that I talk about elevating your marketing plan in 2017, I'm trying to elevate my analysis, and especially my option analysis. There's more than one of you today that came over to the booth and said, I hate options. So I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. But my point is you need, just like in futures with the high frequency trader, and keep in mind, in 2009, at the peak of the financial crisis, 50% of commodity trading was done completely by computers, algorithmic trading. Last year, that went up to 80%. So man is a minority at this point in commodity trading in terms of turning the machines on. Financial services, it's even going to get more so in the next couple of years. So like futures, options, you have to keep the momentum on your side. If there was one or two indicators, that means a lot more than it did 10 years ago to me. It's momentum and sentiment. And if you keep momentum and sentiment on your side, keep your option. But if you don't have momentum and sentiment on your side, it's better to have the futures market, because of the fact if you go up after you buy your option, but then you fall, you take off about 20 to 30, maybe even 40% of your potential rally to get back to above, back to break even or above. So as the rally starts, that's when you buy the options. But when you get in the course of it, and beans are a good example right now, if you got into bean options right now, you do not want to live with those if you take out this week's lows. You just don't want them. Look to get back in on futures if you break back. So that'd be my recommendation under Todd's scenario.
Thank you.
I think you've touched on it. I've never been a meteorologist or a weatherman, and I never played one on TV, but when I watch the weather and see what the drought situation is in the southeast part of the U.S., and maybe it's an old wives' tale, oftentimes our droughts come from that direction. I realize it's early. Any implications at this point or thoughts?
I can take that one if you all don't.
Okay, I watching the same thing, the drought monitor, every Thursday morning. It's a big bullseye right down in that area, so something you need to watch out for. I mean, we need to, Kevin mentioned the wheat market. I think we got to watch the rainfall on the plains too over the next few weeks. I think, especially with that short position there. But I mean, like I said before, we got surprised by the South American weather. I don't think the market's going to be as surprised this time if something
shapens up. We missed the talk of the La Nina coming in this last summer. That kept the beans supported a lot early last summer, anticipating that. So I think if we go in through the winter and that continues, I think the market's going to be pretty volatile, especially as we move into spring planting season and what that acres report said. So that's going to, those kind of things are going to continue to keep some support out of the market, because we got some bulls out in the market, or longs in the bean market especially, and even some shorts in the corns and the wheat that are going to be quick to move if anything like that happens, because I think there's a perception, or at least there's a portion of the market out there that wants to be friendly on something. And obviously the weather changes the balance sheet more than any other thing.
So here's, I think, the answer to your question, relatively speaking, as pertains to in the Southeast. The meteorologists that I talk to, four of the five of them I pre-record, so we get to have a conversation that you actually don't hear, and it can be pretty lengthy before we get started. Usually they will tell me what they want to talk about, and I just list it down. So you may have noted that it wasn't until this week that I even mentioned what was happening in the southeastern part of the United States, despite the fact that it's been going on for a very long time. And that in due course, over the length of the history of talking to these folks, they're out in front, not behind an event, right? So what they really have said is, in the Southeast, doesn't usually spread into the Midwest to begin with, not very often, certainly not from one fall to the next spring, and that more often than not, there are exceptions. So when we have the great big droughts, they will start in the fall and then kind of come through the next season. But rarely does that happens far more rare than it's the big ones. And that usually they just say, hey, we get big changes in our weather patterns from winter to spring, and spring rains come. And spring rains generally come. I think it's probably more important to watch what's been happening with the Kansas wheat, with the wheat in the Great Plains than anything else at this point. Yes, you look like you have either comment or maybe a question.
Todd, I had one small thing to add, maybe. Just one quick thing to add. Here's my plan. It's pretty simple, because I want to get you back to hedging and making profit in 2017. The CFS version 2 model is predicting a very heavy precipitation pattern for the Southeast, for the winter wheat belt like Todd's talking about, and for parts of the Midwest in December. If that thing's wrong, I'll have every client who wants to on January 1 come in and either buy a 420, 520 call strategy, bought, sold call, or an outright $5 December call. But all those are December futures. Get those put on, forget about them until June. Then you go back to selling, and then you talk to your crop insurance people about doing the month add-ons. You know how I recommended that last year, and it worked very well, where you add on the June or the July for a certain amount per acre, and you could add up to your lock-in price or your base price. It was an add-on feature. I'm being told that's going to be expanded this year by people like CGB and Diversified, and I'm sure the other people will do that too. But that's the key, is get the long side locked in, be happy about summertime if there's a drought, and then go back to hedging profit.
I was just wondering, we haven't talked much about 17 crop. Obviously, the price isn't too exciting right now, but what price point and or time frame would you begin to make 17 sales?
Yeah, like I said, I made some sales this morning. I'm about 30% sold in our beans for here in the U.S. Corn, I'm about 20% sold. Price, right, I think I just sold some at 380 on the cash side. Well, a while back when we rallied, I bought some 420 puts and financed them by selling 450 calls. So I'm probably somewhere around 405 on the whole batch. Isn't that where we're at, Jay? Somewhere in there, here in the U.S. So you can sell D17 corn now better than, I mean, I think I sold it at 380 something, and I think we're at 389 or 87. So I just think emotionally it's that first sale, boy, that's just the tough one for me. It's that first sale, getting that anchor in the ground becomes tough for me, because I'll put a price out there and we'll get there and just start to tick back, and then I'll get frustrated and say, well, I wanted to sell it here, but now we're 20 cents lower. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. Next thing, I'm 50 cents lower, and Mama's chiming in my ear, boy, should have made a sale over there. And I said, yeah, probably should have. And then we continue to play that game until I'm really frustrated at a buck lower. And then it becomes a personal issue and I don't make the sale. So that first sale is a tough one for me. I think you got to get a stake in the ground and then start to maneuver and trade a strategy around that. I went out and bought, I think similar to what these guys are saying, I bought some 380 puts in July a while back just because I was scared. I had some unpriced bushels still off the farm. So I just went out and bit the bullet, bought the 380 puts. And I'm like, if something extreme happens, I could sell calls against it or I could do something other. I just had to get something done because I felt like I was getting emotionally uncertain about my next move. So that I always try and think 2 to 3 ahead. And when I was trading in Chicago, everyone said, farmer's worst, do the opposite of the farmer, worst marketer, worst trader in America, right? And I said to him, I said, hey, listen, I live, and I started thinking about it, and I'm like, I live on a farm and on the farm with farmers, and it's different because that's where your wife lives, that's where your kids live, that's where your kids' kids, your parents, everyone lived. It's higher stakes. You know, guys in Chicago, you're trading paper money and things like that. This is your life. It's much more emotionally taxing and much harder. So don't sell yourself short and think you're bad at it. It's just emotionally, it's much more difficult, especially making that first sale. So that's where I'm like, I get it on and I just like, I like what Greg said, they have 5 buckets and filled the first bucket and don't think back about it. And that's kind of a little bit of my skill, so.
Yeah, I've got overvalue at 405. I'm using a 1.9 carryover for 17 corn at this point with some reduced acres, kind of where Aaron's at, around that 90, maybe a little bit under 90 million. I like Kevin's number of 405 a lot that he talked about earlier. There's several areas there we've tried to punch through that. We may be able to get up to another 60 cents higher than that if we have some weather. And that kind of goes back to what Tim was asking is, I think between 405 and 440, you have a lot of it done, and then decide whether you need to defend from then on out and what kind of crop insurance policy you have.
Mike, I've got a question for you. I'm over here. Back to the global condition, the macro. As we look back, the Brexit vote created quite a reaction globally. The Trump win created quite a reaction globally. What do you see as possibilities with the Italian vote on December 4th?
You know, I'm thankful for you bringing that up, Scott, and thank you for being a great addition every year and a big contributor to Will Radio. It means a lot to us. You usually see Steve Erdman here from EFG. Steve had a hernia operation, so our friend Steve couldn't come, but the number one man from Straits Financial is here, Paul Fry. I appreciate you coming down today, Paul, and spending the day with me. But Paul goes to Singapore and Brazil and Indonesia and quite a few areas in his travels. And before the U.S. election, it was all about the U.S. election. Now, what did Paul talk about today to me when I asked him what the buzz was? Italy and France. I think this goes back to the original question of what's the biggest fear you have out there? Are we seeing and witnessing the breakup of the European Union? And I think that's a real question. And if Renzi loses in Italy because he put a lot of cards and a lot of money behind the Obama strategy, and then we see the Le Pen victory in France, I think the trade will see the dollar as more of a safe haven. And I think that's where it really goes back to issue number one, how high can we get in commodities? And that's where I think Kevin did a really good job of illustrating where this macro money sits. It sits on the sidelines for the most part, taking pokes at the market, seeing the crude oil soybean relationship, seeing the soybean stock market relationship, seeing the fact that when the Russian ruble goes up, that makes them more restrictive in their exports for wheat. So the trade pokes its head into the wheat market a little bit. These are the things we're going to have to face, but I think there's a real existential question out there as we get down the road in 2017. Will we have a European Union anything like what we had 20-some years ago when it formed?
What breaks up the European Union? What is it that breaks it up? Or is it just nationalism? And is nationalism, protectionism, enough to do that. I don't know whether that's something
no,
we should talk.
I think that's exactly number one. Number two, look at what China and what Kevin tapped into with Russia. Look what China and Russia have been doing for the past 2.5 years. They've been circumventing all of Europe. They're cutting Europe and the Middle East apart and separating them with the wedge militarily, politically, economically. Vladimir Putin is already starting to talk about taking the natural gas away from Central Europe. Yeah. They're going to starve Europe to the point where Europe becomes less of a factor in the world currency markets. So what's left? The Japanese yen with negative interest rates and then the United States dollar. And I think that's I'm not trying to build a really negative, yeah, bearish, it's the end of the world type scenario. Although, did you get your freeze-dried food after the Cubs won and Trump won?
Okay, so I want to talk about usage side. Ethanol, one. Feed and residual number. Because we've got that one coming up, and I want to know what livestock, and that's a big one, and it's kind of an unknown sort of thing still, and what that really means. And then exports. But let's start, Aaron, with the feed and residual number. Of course, it'll be as of December 1. USDA will bring that out in their January 12 final report for the year. But it'll show up in the grain stocks number there. What are our expectations for it, and how much of a swing might there be in that feed and residual figure?
That's a good question, Todd. I don't know if anybody can get a very good handle on that. And I know we don't have necessarily a great handle on it now. I know we're watching the cattle on feed numbers each month, and they continue to show fairly low placements, at least compared to history. Obviously we're anticipating, or the USDA is anticipating, an increase in that feed and residual number. I don't know. I guess we don't have a good feel on it. I think we have a better feel on, obviously, what exports and ethanol is going to do. And I think we're going to continue to have a big question mark in that feed and residual number. If you look at history, we just cannot get that feed and residual number much above the numbers we're dealing with the last 5 to 10 years. I think exports, obviously a bright spot right now, with the USDA expecting to be the highest number we've seen in 10 to 12 years. Ethanol, the weekly numbers continue to be very good, but we have some limitations. I just don't think the overall total demand number on corn is going to see much change. We've already got a record factored in. And like I said, that's fairly old news. We've been talking about that for a while. So these weekly demand numbers that we see with export inspections, export sales, and ethanol demand, just not going to be able to move the needle too much, because at the end of the day, we just got too much of it.
So the feed and residual, Mike or Kevin?
I'd only add, the best, brightest spot, I agree with Aaron 100% on everything he said. The best, brightest spot for me is the wheat corn spread. We get the wheat, soft red wheat, over a buck in lead month futures, then all of a sudden we can start pulling wheat out of rations and might be able to top off the wheat a little bit more there.
Other questions out here? I'm going to let you all wrap up kind of like we do with Commodity Week with a final thought. Mike Zuzulo, what's your final thought for the day as we get, 4 minutes away from the 5 o'clock hour?
It's been great to be with you all again this year. Thank you for the invitation, Todd. I'm going to end with this. Why did the pilgrim's pants keep falling down?
I do not know.
Because they wore their buckles on their hats. Have a great holiday, everybody.
Mike Zuzulo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Joins me on the air during the closing market report at 2 o'clock on Friday afternoons. Aaron Curtis is with us as well. He's from Midco, from right here in Bloomington, Illinois. Joins us on Monday mornings at 8:55 a.m. Your final thought.
Yeah, I don't have a joke, but I will tell you that I think that we're going to continue to have some opportunities. I know the last couple years we've sat here on these very boring markets where we haven't done anything at all, and then we have these couple week windows when something out of the blue happens. So you got to be prepared for those kind of things. You got to have your offers in. That's what we preach to the customers that we deal with on the elevator side, because right now the offer sheet is pretty clean. They're just producers just don't kind of really know what they want here. As we know we want $4 corn, right? But But just between here, you know, 325 and where we're at now, futures at 350. So, you know, you continue to use that scale-up approach, have those offers in, because there's going to be instances where we come in one morning and just like beans yesterday, up 25 cents. Does that make a lot of sense? Not necessarily, but if you didn't have your offer in, or you might miss opportunities like that. So I just continue to advise you to have those goals and put them in, as offers. Continue to watch these carry markets that we're seeing in corn and continue to use that to your advantage.
And Kevin Van Trump is with the Van Trump Report. He is from Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, Todd, I appreciate you guys having me down. I like to keep things pretty simple. I played sports my whole life. Kids played, and I say I'm going to stick with the same game plan I've had the last couple of years. It's worked pretty well. I just say shoot when the ducks are in the air. As Mike alluded to, and the guys, the markets have become much faster. When we're out duck hunting and the ducks take off, I don't look over at Mike and say, hey, why are those ducks flying in the air? You start shooting. I'm telling you guys, don't ask. By the time you go up to the coffee shop and everybody's playing dominoes and tells you what their philosophy is on why, we come home and it's too late. I know how this works. So just know when you see it start to take off and move, the ducks are in the air. And if you've reached your gross profit margins or your objectives, call up your guy and execute. Guys, everyone, we've all played enough sports to know. I mean, every play looks great. Every play we draw up is designed to run for a touchdown. It's just that we don't execute properly, and we fail to do that at home on the farm, in my businesses, and everything else. So it all boils down to execution. Well, we can analyze till we're blue up here, but I think execution's the name of the game. And right now, it's a two-strike approach. Scoot up in the box, get hit by a pitch if you had to, do whatever, get on base. So I just leave it at that, guys. Keep it real simple here.
Kevin Van Trump is with the Van Trump Report. He joined us Tuesday at the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois, along with the other two corn panelists, including Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and Aaron Curtis from Midco. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.